I'm Stephen M. Hall, MD, an integral physician.
And I'm Grace Porter, a licensed psychotherapist. And together, we're the 7 Tools, a company focused on your personal growth and transformation.
And you are here with us for the Change for Good Summit. This year, we're focusing on building resilience in anxious times.
This summit is full of deep conversation and practical advice. We hope you enjoy this interview.
So now let's dive in. So hi, everybody. This is Dr. Hall with this 2019 Change for Good Summit, Building Resilience in Anxious Times. And I'm really excited for you to hear what our next speaker, Molly McManus, a yoga therapist extraordinaire, has to say. So Molly is a co-owner of Yoga North International Soma Yoga Institute in Duluth, Minnesota. And she enjoys her work teaching like specialized group therapeutic classes and trainings, individual yoga therapy and Ayurveda sessions, as well as being a core faculty on the Institute's teacher training and yoga therapy certification programs. So Molly has sought out for her special areas of interest in chronic pain and the diseases of stress in some programs that she has designed, such as Soma Yoga and Somatics Intensives. She also teaches a Soma Yoga CPR, which stands for Chronic Pain Resolution, not Cardiopulmonary Resuscitation. Making a Change for Good, and we like the name already, right? And 30 Days to Compassionate Self-Discipline. And then our favorite, Yoga for Stress, Anxiety, and Depression. So Molly participates in continuous training and active engagement in her field. So her current journey includes a product line with Nourish Ayurveda, developing a not-for-profit yoga arm of the International Soma Yoga Institute. And then she also serves as a chair of the accreditation board for the International Association of Yoga Therapists. And she does international teaching and speaking engagements, promoting the efficacy of yoga therapy. So Molly, it's the mouthful just to get through all of that you do.
I know.
Yeah. So my wife, Patty, met you at a yoga retreat that you co-taught in Nicaragua. And Patty's been doing yoga since she was a little kid. And so she's not often impressed by yoga teachers, but she really was by you. And she really appreciates not only your knowledge and your expertise, but also your life energy and your presence. So really appreciate that. And so I'm very excited to have you be part of our summit. And as noted in your bio, you actually teach your own classes using Soma Yoga to address anxiety and as well as stress and depression. So welcome, Molly.
Thank you so much. And I appreciate the wonderful recommendation from Patty. She's wonderful as well. So
thanks. So I'm not a yoga person myself, so it would help me if we started with some basics. So can you tell us a bit more about yourself and how you found yoga, and then also how you found somatics and then thought to put them together?
Absolutely. It'd be my pleasure to talk about that. It's really, I think, helped build my life's work. And what that came out of is my own suffering, my own relationship with anxiety, depression, and chronic pain. I grew up in a household that had some trauma around in it, and you know, lots of good intentions, but some hard times over the course of my life. And because of that, kind of developed my own life of anxiety and depression and chronic pain. Have had some diagnoses of rheumatoid arthritis and some other of those kind of things that manifest in the joints and in the body. And, you know, went through a course of my life where I was medicated and doing that. And I really always felt like there was something that was missing. And for me, it was that I felt like, in a way, everything that was manifesting in my body and my mind had a real, in a way, a spiritual aspect to it for me. I felt like I was in crisis, but not just of the body. It was more of a crisis of the spirit. And I knew that I needed to go and dig deep and try and figure out, you know, if I could get to know myself, I could move inward more and get a sense of what was going on. And so I did that with the help of yoga. And at first just taking classes and doing things like that. But I found this wonderful school, Yoga North, this one wonderful institute. And I started to take their teacher trainings many years ago. And I really found a way to work with both the anxiety and the chronic pain and started to find a lot of relief. I found sort of a way to go inward that was introspective, interoceptive, which is a word we use a lot in yoga therapy, which means to understand or be able to sense what's happening inside. And it's a thing that we often in anxiety and depression and pain stop doing. We get really externally focused so that we don't have to feel what's happening in here. And so yoga was a way for me to really do that. And so I would say it's the best thing that's happened to me as far as that goes. So now I'm not only, you know, it's not that I never have anxiety, but now I have a way to work with it, right? I have a way to, tools to use to facilitate my moving through it.
Yeah. Wow, that's so great to hear about your journey and how it's helped you. And I think that's the best kind of learning. And I bet a lot of our listeners would relate to that idea that it's not just an imbalance or being out of touch with the body, but it's the spirit as well. And that you do need to go inside, find those answers. That's so great. So, so many of our listeners may not have heard about somatics. So can you describe it briefly and tell us about some of its basic concepts?
Sure. And if it's okay, I'll talk a little bit about that blend that you've asked me to with yoga.
Yes.
So somatics is a discipline. It's a movement practice discipline by a person named Thomas Hanna. He originated it. And he's no longer with us, but luckily his work lives on with, you know, now more and more practitioners. And somatics is a form of neuromuscular reeducation. It's actually getting, in a way, the brain and whatever area of the body that we need to really back communicating better. So with somatics, you might know that you're a person who often has a lot of tension in the shoulders. This is one that many of us can relate to, that we hold our tension in the shoulders. We even lift them up and we try to relax them, but there's just no way to get them to relax. You can say relax shoulder, but it won't happen. And what will happen with somatics is that we do neuromuscular reeducation. We actually get the brain and the muscles talking to each other again, as it were, in order for that communication to work so that the muscle can then contract and release so that you have full capacity. So consider if you're a person who has a lot of tension in your body, and there are probably many listeners that have some tension in their body, some pain and tension in their body, that it's a lot of energy and it takes a lot of effort, even if it's a subconscious effort, to hold these muscles tight in that protective stance or in that pain protecting stance. And so with somatics, what we really find is that we bring in new interventions where those muscles are able to release, pain decreases, body awareness increases, anxiety, depression can all start to decrease as well, because we get more involved with the whole process of, you know, being in this embodiment in a way that can be enjoyment. So I hope that's answered a little bit. So again, it's neuromuscular reeducation, brain to muscles. We work with the sensory motor loop continuously in movement patterns. And then how we tie that into yoga. So many people think of yoga as those kind of pretzel shaped, you know, things that you see on TV or in the magazines. And the form of yoga we do is really more of a therapeutic approach to that movement. And those movements are called asana. Many people think asana or the movements are all that yoga is, but yoga is really a much bigger wheel, which I can address in a little bit. But when it comes to the movement section of the pie of yoga, that the asana that we do is a really therapeutic. So we would never push anybody into poses. We would also want to make sure that we were keeping people at just the right stimulus, just the right amount of movement, no overstretching. And so we might use some classic postures, but we kind of scale them back, and so that people get really in touch and more empowered to be in their body.
Wow. So it sounds to me that somatics is kind of like bringing mindfulness to what Hannah called soma, which my understanding is that's like the experience of being ourselves as this integrated mind, body, spirit unit. Is that pretty accurate?
Yeah, he said that even when we start saying mind, body, spirit, there's too much division. We are, you know, an experience, and that experience he called soma. So when you consider yourself a soma, all the layers are involved and you don't create separation. So that when we're trying to get what I call whole being, well-being, you're not just differentiating and working on parts. You're really thinking about how to be with this whole integrated you and bring more ease and joy and freedom in it.
Right. And that's more accurate to how we actually function. Because mm-hmm. we're all those, I think of it like you pour all these different colors of paint into one can, and that's how we function. So that's amazing. So what is it about yoga, do you think, that makes it so beneficial? Like, is it a way to breathe? Is it becoming mindful of tension patterns? Is it maybe incorporating a yoga way of thinking? What would you say?
Well, Steve, I would say you hit on a lot of it already. We think about yoga in almost like a pie shape, that there are many different aspects of it. And the first one that we often work with is something called the yamas and niyamas. And the yamas and niyamas are the ethical system of yoga, which might sound a little boring, but it's not. It's actually looking at the ways that we practice things like truthfulness and nonviolence and non-stealing with ourselves, first and foremost. You'll be surprised when you start to study these things that many of us are pretty violent to ourselves. Even the way we hold our schedules or the amount of times that we're on a computer for a really long time, it's actually causing some harm. And so when we start to consider this, there's 10 of these ethical guidelines that we work with. It really brings more harmony within the self, and then how we turn around and then bring that out into the world. So that's the first part of yoga that people don't even really, in the public, don't really know that that's an aspect of yoga that we find is the most functional. And what the great things that one of the teachers, Deborah Dell and Yogi Raj, there are a couple of people that we've worked with, talk about is we stop making so many messes in our life. We start really considering, how does this affect my life as a whole? And then guess what? Energy gets to be reclaimed from the ways that it maybe was going out after ourselves when we were making more mess in our life, right? With ourselves and others. So that's just the first two little pieces of the pie.
Okay.
And then we have the asana piece, or the movement practices. That's just one other little piece of the pie. And so we've already kind of spoke to that, and the somatics really brings even more mindfulness to that. Then there's something called pranayama, which is breath practices. And breath practices are particularly helpful in both working with chronic pain and working with anxiety, depression, and in really what I call the diseases of stress, because it's, we think of it as this link between, in a way, the mind and the body. Again, if we're talking about somas, it's already integrated, but we start to feel fractured. And the breath can be one of the things that actually helps us bring ourselves back together and feel less fractured, and to be able to calm the nervous system, change it from a, you know, what we might think of as the fight or flight or freeze nervous system to one that's able to be engaged with the world, one that's able to be softer about life and move into it well. So that's an aspect of pranayama. There are ways that pranayama can help us raise our energy and you know, build more energy in the system. For instance, if you were a person suffering from maybe that lethargic idea of depression, versus some breath practice that help us actually bring our energy down, calm our energy, ground our energy. If you were more anxious or agitated, you could actually use pranayama and breath practices to calm you. And then on the whole other side of the wheel, we start working with something where we learn to work with our senses better in the world. So there's a lot going on all the time with our senses, and we learn how to moderate, nurture, and modify the use of our senses, and learn to be able to turn them inward so that we can do a lot more of the mindfulness practices that are on the whole other side of the wheel, like meditation, concentration, things like that.
Well, that sounds fascinating. And then and then putting it all together.
Yes.
Right? So there's a saying that I heard that I really like, and it's that mind follows breath.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're anxious, to just consciously choose to slow your breathing down will kind of automatically slow your mind down. Is that what you experience as well?
That is what I experience. There's lots of new science on breath, or new informed science on breath. But one of the things I just know personally, that when I'm anxious, and when I've worked with many, many clients with anxiety, that there's a lot of chest breathing and short, shallow breathing. But if we can start to draw the breath a little deeper down into the belly or the respiratory diaphragm and slow it down, even let that breath exhale be just a little bit more extended, it makes a huge difference. You can change the course of your mind, as it were, in just a moment. It takes very little time.
Wow, yeah. So that's a nice tool to have in the moment if you start to feel overwhelmed. But from your perspective, what do you see as the root causes of anxiety in people?
Great. There's a few things I think. I think it's living out, a lot of times for us, it's living out of accordance of who we really are. I feel like that was part of what I've saw in myself and what I see in other folks, that there's a concept called, I'm going to give you another Sanskrit word, hope that's okay, that's called dharma. And dharma is sort of the thought of as your purpose or your reason for being here, or you're part of what's here to do. And there's a way that it also means that you're living in accordance with nature. You're living in accordance with your own nature, and then the larger nature as well. I feel like a lot of times when we feel anxiety, depression, these things, there may be, of course, trauma from the past that helps, that actually creates this inability to live within who we are truly, with our own true nature. Maybe we've developed habits that are hurtful to us, but we keep doing them because we just don't really know any better. I know for me, you know, I had habits that were just not great habits. And every time I would do them, it would be almost like a strike against me that I was putting on myself, and an arrow to my own heart. And that until I could start to really recognize that that wasn't serving me, and start to shift my belief systems and shift what I felt like I got to have in the world, I continue to do those behaviors. So I think that's an aspect of it, is not being able to really settle into who we are. Having an misunderstanding of our true nature is what yoga would say. Yoga says that, you know, that we're really all one and all connected, might even be the word, that if we had a sense of our true connection, there wouldn't be this suffering. But we start to separate ourselves either from past trauma or from current activities, that we separate ourselves away from each other, and it causes suffering. We start to tolerate less in the world. There's even a yogic map that really talks about this, called the kleshas.
The what?
The kleshas. And the kleshas means afflictions, how we make ourselves suffer by practicing really strong likes and really strong dislikes, so that we tolerate less and less in the world. And, you know, we sort of need things to be a way in order to, a particular way in order to not suffer. Well, so yoga is saying, actually, we want to be able to open ourselves up to more. We want to be able to really realize our connection with each other. We want to be able to be back in our spiritual nature. And I really truly believe that when we experience ourselves as soma, that's being back in accordance with our true self, our true nature.
Yeah, that's fascinating to me, because in my own journey, my own exploration from the medical perspective, and trying to understand, well, what is healing? I asked myself that question back when I was still a resident and didn't know the answer. And so I kept searching. And what I found was that healing is that process of finding out who you really are and then making choices that fit that. So it's really compatible with, I guess I should have just listened to the yogis from the beginning. Huh? They've known it for thousands of years.
Yeah, they just say one problem. There's only one problem. We don't know who we are.
Wow.
And if we can actually figure out who we are, the suffering is so much less.
So that kind of leads to the next question then is, so when someone comes to you with a lot of anxiety, what do you do? I mean, how do you help them?
Yeah, so I think that there are of course many different avenues to help, but my approach would be from looking at the layers of ourselves. So remember, there's a physical body, there's an energetic being, you know, our breath that you were talking about, and then there's our mind and even some layers beyond. So I want to make sure that I was addressing not just the anxiety that they were feeling in their mind, but actually what's happening in the body. Quite often when there's anxiety, there's constriction in the body. So you might feel sometimes it's a sense of almost like I've got to take care of it all. And we often will call this a green light, that people are really extended through the back. They're forward facing. They've almost have this look of, you know, like I have to get it all done kind of feeling. And so we would address that body and try to see if we could release some of the tension and allow them to get more neutral through the body and more, in a way, supple and more relaxed and softer in the body on that level. We would work with the breath for sure, bringing some calming breath, letting the breath come back to the respiratory diaphragm so that we could bring on what we often think of as the parasympathetic system. For many folks that have anxiety, they don't visit that very often. They're up in that sympathetic,
right,
you know, nervous system a lot. So that breath practice and the body practices would help that. And then from there, what will naturally be happening is this thing that we've been talking about, which is interoception, the ability to sense within. And I almost think about it like they are growing their internal vocabulary, that they don't just feel anxiety. They can start to feel other senses within themselves. So the anxiety doesn't need to be so high because sensing other things starts to come further up, right? And so then the mind practices would be, you know, looking at some of the aspects, some of the things that bubble up from the mind with anxiety, we might be able to deal with a little bit more since we've got a good grounded base in the body and the breath. And so that would be another course of action. We'd start to look at the mind. We might bring in the yamas and niyamas that I talked about. How are you practicing truthfulness and nonviolence with yourself? How are you dealing with your senses? Are you using your senses well in the world? Do you spend too much time on TV, or do you ever let yourself walk in nature? You know, bringing in those aspects as well. That's, for me, really yoga and yoga therapy is working with the senses.
So what's your understanding of the relationship between resiliency and anxiety?
Mm-hmm. Well, my experience or feeling of that is that with anxiety, and I would say even depression, PTSD, all of these, again, the diseases of stress, is that it wears down on our resiliency. It's almost like the stores start to be depleted because of all of the energy that those diseases of stress take from us. So they take from us in a way because we are in constriction in the body. And imagine if I were to walk around like this all of the time. Okay, so a week goes by. Am I going to get tired? Is this going to take some of my resources? My gosh, yes. Well, the same thing is true is if we're contracted through the chest or contracted through the back body or contracted, you know, somewhere else in the body, that also takes the same kind of energy as holding this up like this for weeks at a time. So I think it taps us that way.
Just for the listeners, I want to say that you are like making a muscle with your arm when you're holding that.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Yeah. So then it also taps us in a way that we are, if you think about the aspects of our mind, there's a part of our mind that's the senses that go out into the world and a part of our mind that has bringing in input, you know, so bringing in and then what's how we react out in the world. So sense in, sense out. And a lot of times in anxiety, that is overwhelmed. It's going on continuously. We're hypervigilant. We're taking in so much. Mm. We are not able to manage our senses well. And so that would be an aspect of a way that I think that it really takes our energy, our resiliency. So with yoga therapy, what we start to do is actually, how are you going to nourish the senses and how are you going to protect the senses so that you're not being drained all the time. Your resiliency isn't going to be drained. What ways will you take care of yourself? So those are just two of the ways. I think we could probably think of many other, but that's...
Is there a way to build resiliency with yoga?
Yep. We talk about a couple things. We talk about safe experiments. And that means that once we start to discover, you know, where our triggers are or where we might need a little support, we move into those areas in safe ways. For instance, for me, I know if I'm constantly practicing, you know, I have to have it this way. Like I only can go to this grocery store and I can only go to here because I've got so much fear of going outside, that what I might do is practice just a safe way to go somewhere else. Okay. I know I want to go get a book and I want to go to the library, and I have this one friend I can rely on, and then she and I are going to go to the library together. So I have a safe experience of going there, and I grow my tolerance. I grow my resilience. So then now next time I can go to the library and I don't run home and not leave the house for 4 days. So it's actually taking these little tiny steps. That might seem like a big step, by the way, for many people who have a lot of anxiety there. There are other ways, I would say, that we can grow it. And that would be simple practices like the physical practices and the breath practices. Bringing a little eustress, right? That good positive stress. Feeling strong in your own legs helps you remember that you have the capacity to have this resiliency that I think in some ways is just waiting to be revived for many of us.
There's something that you talked about that I would like to explore in more depth, and it, because I, you know, so many people are suffering from anxiety and like I said, that sense of separation, and how do you suggest they get their foot in the door to a therapeutic process? You've transformed your whole life, it sounds like. And that probably took years, I would imagine. Years of study and practice. And
it's an ongoing process, as with all of us. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's still ongoing. So for people who would like to get started, what would you suggest? Like you started by taking yoga classes, it sounds like, or...
Yeah. And that was the answer at the time. And now, you know, there's so many more yoga classes out in the world, and not all of them, frankly, are appropriate for everybody. There's many yoga classes now that would actually, I think, at the level some of us are at, would not be great for us. So I wouldn't suggest going to a really big fitness class if you're having a bunch of anxiety. It might actually bring up your anxiety. Mm. So finding a yoga therapist is a good way to do it. And then also just thinking about some simple practices like looking at your own breath and being able to cultivate a calmer breath. This is really simple and but very profound. So noticing when you hold your breath and noticing when you have almost a dysfunctional breath. So like if you notice that you're hyperventilating or you're chest breathing, if you can start to build some awareness, you can change it. And you don't necessarily always have to have help from the outside. We are really, really powerful individuals. And when we choose to tune our awareness back toward ourselves, and sometimes with support of others, we have the power to change. We have the power to you know, make our life different than it is, if that's what we want. We always think about the fact that ultimately we're all really whole. And in a way, there's nothing wrong with us. It's just that there's a perception or a habit or a process that we're in that isn't as functional or healthy or joy creating as some that we could choose. So it's choosing differently. And now I'm not saying it's going to be easy. I'm not saying the choices are always easy to make. I'm just saying that there is a possibility. And if I keep that in my mind, it creates hope for me. And it creates me willing to put at least one foot on the journey every day, even if that's as far as I get.
That's excellent advice. And so I see in our society, we're so trained to keep our senses focused outwardly. We're always looking outside ourselves for answers, you know, looking things up on Google, or we think we have to take a class or learn it from a teacher or something. But you're saying if a person can start to also focus their senses inwardly, there's a lot of resources inside that we don't even know we have. Is that?
Definitely. I truly believe that is the case. Now, I want to make something that I hope doesn't sound contradictory. But what I do want to say is sometimes there's times when our mind, if we were just to turn it inward unattended, it would cause more problems. Mm-hmm. There have been times in my life where anxiety, if I would have just said, okay, I'm going to sit down quietly and meditate, that would have been a disaster. I would have just been telling myself all the things I did wrong, all the things I wasn't doing right, all the mistakes I'd made in my life, what I wasn't. That's not necessarily always a good case. But if you give the mind, so if you think of the mind as a muscle, a muscle is a great way. If you give that mind a job of watching the breath, or of, you know, we use mantra, or we use visualization, we use things like that. If you can give the mind those jobs and calm, you know, start to extract from the outside and give it a job more internal, then little by little, we're able to sit quietly and listen to the things that are present within ourselves. So that's why I love Soma Yoga, because we use the body as an avenue to calm not only the body, but to bring the mind back focused inward. But it's got a place to go. It just doesn't free float to the next anxious thing that's traveling in the mind. Does that make sense? I hope I...
Yes, that's a very important point, because it brings up, you know, there's so many paradoxes to being a human being, and it brings up a paradox that we have inside us all that we need, but we often need each other in order to access it.
Relationships are school. We get ourselves in relationship with others. We have it in us, but we need a mirror, as it were.
So that's a really good point. So if people are so bound up inside, and that's one thing I noticed, like when you sit with fear, for example, and just sit and watch fear, it often just mushrooms big, whereas other things you can sit and watch well. So that's a really good point for people to remember. So,
and it would be, it would be a great place to do a safe experiment. Fear would be not something I would leave myself alone with. I would pick a small thing rather than let myself go into the mushroom of fear. I would pick something small. I'm afraid to go outside of my house. Well, maybe I would find a way to just step out on my front porch rather than having to go in my car and go somewhere else. So, you take tiny bites then instead of as large.
So, yeah, good advice. So you're going to offer a short seated Soma practice at the end of this time together. But I'd like to leave people, and we'd like to leave people with that. So we're going to end the video with that practice. But I have a couple more questions first. So what other resources can you recommend to our listeners to help them learn more about Soma Yoga or using yoga to improve their lives? What any resources that you might suggest?
Well, sure. I mean, obviously I can recommend checking out our website, which is Yoga North Duluth, and we're Yoga North International Soma Yoga Institute is what we are. And we have a couple of movement guidebooks, and then we have a few different props and things like that are really helpful. There is the ability to do online one-on-one sessions as well to work with not only the movement, but some of the other aspects I've been talking about.
Is that one-on-one with a yoga therapist?
Yeah, like me.
Like you. So with anybody in the country, you don't have to be in Duluth. That is great.
Right. That's right. Being together in person is great, but Zoom is a wonderful platform. And I've worked with people all over the world, so it works great. And then I would really recommend a book called The Yamas and Niyamas by Deborah Adele. And that is, I think, the best book on the yamas and niyamas. And that actually came out of our studio. Deborah was one of the founders of the studio. And it is a wonderful approach to the foundations of yoga philosophy. And each chapter has some awareness practices you can start to work with in there. So I think that would be a really good one for people to look into.
Well, that sounds great, because it's sometimes hard to find good information on the yamas in one place without having to look lots of places.
Yeah, I even have the book.
So who is who's the author?
Her name is Deborah Adele.
A-D-E.
L-E.
Mm-hmm. L-E, okay.
And she's right here from Duluth as well.
That's convenient. Do you know if there are so many yoga teachers in other areas of the country, or more people putting these two practices together?
Yeah, Soma yoga is something that we started doing. We found somatics. We had been teaching yoga for a long time, and then we found somatics, and it was like a light bulb went on where it was like, these need to be integrated. And so we've built teacher trainings and yoga therapy certification courses. And so we've trained, quite a few people. So we have people in Canada and Iowa and North Dakota, South Dakota, Wisconsin. So, really in lots of different places. Mm-hmm. So that wanted to find out if we had somebody in your area, it would be easy to just, call Yoga North or email info@yoganorthduluth.com and we could help find you somebody. And also just to say, if it's not a Yoga North trained person, there are other people that are doing wonderful yoga therapy that might not have the same exact methodology, but that could certainly serve you. Anytime you find somebody who has been has their CIAYT, which means Certified Yoga Therapist through the International Associations of Yoga Therapists, that's a really good marker that that they've had a lot of training and quite a bit of experience to be able to have that. It's like having a PhD in a way, rather than somebody that's just got their nursing assistant type of thing.
Okay, so there is certification for yoga therapists.
There is.
Okay, perfect. So if you could leave our listeners with three bits of advice about how to address anxiety in their lives, what would they be?
Yeah, I think for me, one of the things that was really helpful for me is to see if I could have a pinpoint, or what I would call the departure point, in that, if I was going along and things were starting to bring anxiety to me, or I was having anxiety build in me, that there was normally a point when I could start to sense a habit that I would do, whether that was contracting or whether that was lashing out, whatever that might have been, or withdrawing. And if I could start to sense when that was going to happen, I would call it the departure point, because then I would bring in a yogic practice to help me. Instead of going down the path that anxiety was taking me, I would choose to do a breath practice, or do a seated quick movement practice where I was checking in with my own body to stop having almost all the energy up in my head. Anxiety is a really heady feeling. And if I can get embodied again, I am normally able to get off of that. So where's your departure point? Can you pinpoint it? So that's the number one. And then when you find the departure point, can you put in an antidote? If I'm feeling super anxious, I need to figure out a way to ground. What's the opposite feeling that I want to cultivate? So if I'm feeling depressed, I might want to get a bit of a lift. I might want to get some energy. So what's the antidote? And then finally, to consider, really consider the use of your senses and start developing practices that allow you to not always be so externally focused in ways that are not checked. So that you might start to say, how do I nourish more internal awareness? Or how do I notice if I'm always a person that moves small and I'm always at my computer, maybe I need to actually figure out a way to reach out and stretch and do things that allow my body to get big. So just really checking in with what you're doing with your in and out of senses. Those are my three.
Excellent advice. Wow. So thank you so much, Molly, for all your wisdom. It's been so great and really amazing to have you on this year's Change for Good Summit. So it seems like this year's topic of building resilience in anxious times is like just really tailor-made to the work that you do. So I'm so glad.
It sure is.
So we thought we'd do that practice now and then just end the interview with a silence at the end of the practice, if that fits well with what you plan to do.
That sounds wonderful.
Whatever you'd like to do now.
Okay. So I'd like us to be able to find a seat. And so some of you may be seated at a desk, and that's fine. Let yourself be seated there. Some of you might want to move to sitting on the floor. Either way is just fine.
Or pull off to the side of the road?
Yeah, pull off to the side of the road for sure. Don't do this practice while driving. So once you've found that seat, even see if you can become aware of your seat. And some of the ways to do this are actually noticing where your sit bones, those bony parts of the rear of you, and seeing if you can feel them. You might rock from side to side. Now, get current with what's happening around you. You're going to hear my voice. You probably have noises in your area. Notice what's around you. But then if you can, choicefully move inside, meaning you might close your eyes, or you might have your gaze down somewhere on the floor. Let your awareness start to come more and more inward. Obviously, you'll have the awareness of my voice. But we'll bring more attention to our body as well. I'm going to invite you to actually move the body. And we'll use breath as a little bit of a guide. As you inhale, see if you can begin to create a little arch in the muscles of your low back. For me, it feels like my sit bones start to arc backwards a little off of the seat. And that low back has a bit of an arch. It's a contraction back there. And then see if you can bring that arch back to neutral. Sit bones start to rest back toward the seat where they originally were. And do this several times slowly, really seeing if you can sense what it feels like to make engagement of the muscles of the back. And then soften the muscles of the back. Sensing and feeling the low back muscles engage. This is moving into extension. This is part of a pattern we call the green light or go pattern. And this is often how it feels when we're anxious. We turn these muscles on. And what we want to do is learn how to turn them on and purposely turn them off, come back to a neutral. The next time you release the arch, see if you can begin to reverse. Maybe it's an exhale. Engage the belly muscles and let the back round. You might even feel the sit bones tuck under you a little and the shoulders curling forward, like an intentional slump. The body is now moving into flexion. The front of the body is engaged, belly muscles engaged. And then let yourself curl back up, release the tension on the front line, come to neutral. This is a curl. Try this several times slowly. Curling forward, even the head could drop. Notice that as you curl forward, the back gets a little bit of length. Now begin to marry these two practices together. Moving into the arch, back line is in contraction, then the neutral, pause there, and then into the curl, and then neutral. Just slowly going back and forth, feeling and sensing. From a Soma Yoga perspective, you are consciously moving your body into, and more importantly, out of stress responses that we often carry unconsciously. Notice now how these forward and backwards movements are even moving out in limbs. You might notice the shoulders widen, the arms move. You might notice how it informs the legs and the feet. After one more pass back and forth, Let yourself come to the new neutral, where the spine is upright, has all its beautiful curves, but you've let go of tension in the back of the body and the front of the body as much as you can today. Let's just do a little bit more with this work of the trunk. And so now I'm going to have you actually start to draw one shoulder up towards your ear and draw one shoulder down towards your waist. So it's going to look a little like you're tipping from one side to the other. So one shoulder goes up towards your ear, the other goes down towards your waist. See if you can sense the shoulder blades on the back of the body as they glide along the rib cage. The next time you bring a shoulder down, see if you can, on that same side, hike the hip up, giving you a little complication here. And then switch, the next shoulder moves down, and then that side of the waist hikes. So you're feeling a little bit of a C curve from one side to the next. Just one or two more. Give the mind the job of really sensing what it feels like to move and then to release. Let the shoulders stack back to neutral. Let the pelvis soften back in space. And then let's actually do a little bit more here. Let's have one shoulder come forward. So if your hands are on your legs, you might even feel that hand slide toward the knee of the shoulder that's coming forward. And then a shoulder goes back. So let yourself differentiate again. One shoulder comes forward, one shoulder goes back. This doesn't need to be big, just enough for you to sense. I often say least possible effort, most possible awareness. Feel that gentle movement through the rib cage. Right now we're beginning to free the cage of the breath, which can be the rib cage, so that we can breathe more fully and gently in a moment. Last time, one shoulder forward, one shoulder back. Now settling back, neutral spine, pelvis relaxed, shoulders at ease. Even see if you want to adjust your body a little now that you've changed so much about the torso. And I'll have us close our eyes again if we've opened, if that feels comfortable. Otherwise, just a soft gaze somewhere that feels supportive. Now I'll have you bring your awareness to the base of the nose. And see if you can feel a slight touch of cool air as you inhale at the nose. And a slight touch of warm air as you exhale. And just let the mind have the job of resting on this awareness for a few passes. See if you can deepen the awareness inside. So the breath is moving in through the nose. Notice if you sense it at the back of the throat, the expansion of the lungs, or that open feeling of the respiratory diaphragm, your belly bellowing out as you inhale. And then also notice what you can sense about the exhale. In and out. Here we are working with the breath sheath, or the breath and energy part of our body, our soma, really. Gradually, your breath will flow a little bit more slowly, a little bit more smoothly. Now see if you can sense the energy in your body, the part of the energy of the body that's allowing your lungs to expand and contract, your heart to beat, even your stomach gurgle. So we've done a good job of bringing our awareness inside. I'm going to have us start to sense the part of our awareness that takes in sensory input. You might even think to rest your awareness in your brain. This is the part that hears my voice, that senses the temperature in the room. Is it warm or cool? The part that notices your nose itching and either orders your hand to scratch it or suppresses that urge. Get a sense of this part of us that takes in all the stimuli of your life and in turn generates sort of a reflexive mental chatter. You want to allow this to calm itself by once again visiting the breath. Become aware one more time of the breath at some place in the body, either at the base of the nose or maybe the belly as it moves in and out. But now there's an aspect of our mind, of our being, that made the decision to tune in today, that's staying and participating in this awareness practice. And it's willing you to stay here and complete it. This part of you recognize the value of expanding your self-awareness. And it's the guiding intelligence that helps us heal, that helps us remember who we are, that actually allows us to build that resilience. See if you can sense a part of you that's connected and wise. Breathing still, relaxed and even. Let us do a last aspect of this awareness, settling into a state of contentment, cultivating it really. Happy with the feeling in the body. Satisfied by the amount of breath coming in and out. A calming of that outward focus. A trust of our own inner wisdom. And then resting in a place of connectedness, of attunement. This is a place that's always with us, underlying. No sense of lack here or fear, nor that of desire. There's nothing needed. Now, just simply be aware of your own awareness in all of this. The watcher of all of this. Your true self. This is our pure consciousness, having this experience, but lies beyond this experience. Think of it as your essential nature, beyond the elemental nature of this body, this mind. Rest here in your own being for as long as you can hold your attention.